Also known as the most hated man on the internet.
And his website is anyone up.
Me and my friends would just post a bunch of girls, and I was like, yo, I can make money out fucking people over.
He thought of himself as the king of revenge porn.
He made it appear that you would be very successful by being a complete sociopath on the internet.
And it pissed me off.
I pleaded with him to please remove these images, and the response that I got, LOL.
Has there been any individual you've just felt sorry for to the point that you take something down?
No. It's just too much fun.
But the one thing he didn't anticipate was Charlotte Laws.
Welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds, and more Criminal Minds coming on Paramount Plus.
That's what I heard, Jim. Yeah. Can you say anything more about it? Well, you can say something more about it when I do my introduction. I'm Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service, and host of the podcast Crime Analyst. So Criminal Minds, Jim.
Yeah, it's coming back big time. It's going to be on Paramount Plus. It's a 10-episode order, and it'll give us an opportunity to dive a little more deeply into a very scary Criminal Minds situation. That's all I could say.
So are you back in the writer's room? Is that happening now?
It's not happening now, but we are moving ahead, yes.
Excellent news. Well, I look forward to hearing more, as I'm sure all of our listeners do. And today we are not with Lisa Zambetti because she is off on holiday in a rather exotic location. So it would be Jim and I, which is very exciting.
We miss Lisa, but we're going to try to carry on without her today. And we're going to talk about a series that's on Netflix that bothered the hell out of me, and I'm sure it did you, Laura.
Yeah, so it was funny. I got your text and we had just finished watching it. And the most hated man on the internet, my goodness, so much anger just watching it at so many points. We had to do it in several viewing sessions because it was just so angry making.
Yeah, absolutely. And I literally just discovered it on there. I think I had heard something about it in the past. But so when I saw the title, I was like, oh, yeah, I think I know what this is about. And I just sat down and said, well, I'm going to watch this. And I did it in two sittings as well. But I agree with you completely that this guy, and I'm not even going to use his name, was one of the most atrocious human beings in terms of taking advantage of others, being malicious and malignant. And I'm sure that if we compare him to Dr. Harris' psychopathy checklist, that he's going to score incredibly high, incredibly high.
Yes, I was writing down those traits, and absolutely, and I read what his mother said about him, but perhaps for our listeners who don't know what we're talking about, this is a Netflix show. It's a three-part Netflix show, and it's produced by Raw Productions again. So we did Don't Fuck With the Kitties in other recording sessions, and also The Tinder Swindler was one of theirs. So I kind of knew what we were going to get. But I have to say, you know, it's just new lows each time of depraved behavior and utter misogyny, just so vile and so debauched. But it's not just really about him, and we won't name him, Jim, I agree. Right. He's still trying to get the spotlight, and the Netflix show actually were going to interview him, and he dropped out at last minute, which some of the producers said initially they were upset about, and then they felt that actually Charlotte Laws was a far better way through in terms of the real activist and heroine at the center of this, and I agree with them. I mean, actually, we don't need his voice. We do hear it across the three episodes, but why do we need to hear more from him?
Yeah,
I think he's made his position clear.
Yeah, especially not his curated voice, because that's what we would get. We would get his bullshit, his attempts at trying to appear to be better than he actually is. His behavior screams loud enough for anybody to hear. And that's what we're going to focus on today after we focus on the victims. And Charlotte Law, who became a champion for those victims, what an amazing woman. And to go back and see a little bit of her history and how she managed to use her personality and her wit and her will to get into places that nobody else could get into and to meet people that she really wanted to meet. And she made the opportunities for herself. And I think those skills that she learned in her earlier in her life and what led to her writing her book, all those skills actually helped her become a better investigator. And she is like one of the investigative journalists said, she's like an investigative journalist. The hell with that. She's like an FBI agent. I mean, or a Scotland Yard agent. She is somebody who did not give up. She kept pursuing, and she felt it was her obligation to not only help her daughter, but when her daughter was out of the horrific position that this asshole put her in, Charlotte still maintained her integrity and her dedication to the victims that she had spoken to.
Yeah, I think she's incredible, an amazing activist and advocate. And that's exactly why we need advocates, Jim, as we know, because when things like this happen to you, and you've mentioned her daughter, Kayla, who had pictures taken, she took the pictures herself, but then she found that they were posted online and she was devastated. And you really feel disempowered when things like this happen. So it was just incredible. She confided in her mother. And as she said, her mother's an incredible woman and she just didn't give up. And even when, well, there's a couple of things within that, because, you know, Charlotte became the investigator, like you said, and actually did the job of the FBI. And I feel that she handed over the case file that for them, it was just really processing, right? All the things that she had done, and she pointed them in different directions, and we'll probably come on to that. But the fact that she had managed to get Kayla's pictures taken down and then she carried on because she was so distressed by what had happened to the other women. They'd all shared stories with her. And I think when you hear how ruinous this sort of behavior is and how traumatic it is, and that some women thought about taking their own lives, others had their children taken away from them, that she felt she just could not let them down. And that to me is just one of the most empowering moments. In fact, there were multiple. There was one from, many moments from James, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, but I wanted all his fucking teeth, McGibney. And that quote I thought was brilliant. But there are several people in here who played a key role, but Charlotte Laws really led the charge. And I'm really glad that they talked and they framed multiple victims across the series as well. I thought that was so important that we kept hearing from them. Because again, when pictures in particular or videos are taken of you, you just feel such shame. And so it silences you actually, because you don't want them people looking you up or looking for those pictures. Right. So there's a bit of a double whammy, isn't there?
Absolutely. That's what I was just going to say. It wasn't just that he was posting, quote, revenge porn type pictures. It was that he also linked it to their social media accounts and then encouraged everyone out there to abuse those people, not just for whatever pictures that were taken, but to try to attack them in every way possible. And that's what was disgusting. There's disgusting on top of disgusting on top of really revolting disgusting, because then this asshole would get messages from these women and some men who had their pictures, not just pictures that they had taken, but pictures that were taken from them. They were literally hacked into their private collections, and these pictures were taken from them. And then when they were posted, he connects them to their social media, and he encourages everyone to literally go off on them. And everything from horrific attacks about their person or their physicality or what they've done, calling them whores, all that kind of stuff, but then also attacking family members and his protective language where he said, well, they should never, if they didn't want their pictures on the internet, they should never have taken them. Well, that's just complete and utter bullshit, because what he did and what his cohorts did was hack into people's computers. That's a crime. Steal their private pictures. That's a crime. And then put them up online, just completely ignoring copyrights. That's another crime. So they're doing all this stuff and then literally taking advantage of those people, some of them through sextortion, some of them through sort of ripple effects of having these pictures posted online for everyone to see. So there's two things that I want to focus on in terms of the bad behavior, the bad stuff that we saw. And one is this offender who organized and created this site. And two is the horrific mob mentality, almost cult of fascination that his followers had that basically encourage them to do even more outrageous stuff and to do even more outrageous stuff to people. In other words, these followers who called him father, who basically said he's a god because he would do these horrific things to these women, these followers actually wanted to one-up him and do even worse things to get his attention. And he encouraged that. And so what you had afterwards was just a melee of people who literally would do anything they thought was horrible in order to get some light on this website.
Yeah, I think the psychology, Jim, is very interesting of how he managed to get people so into this depraved behavior and becoming actors, and not just actors in it themselves, but threatening Charlotte Laws and her daughter, threatening rape and murder, and almost Manson-esque, you know, calling themselves the family. It's much more than just one bad actor. And I think we do have to take him apart. And I do think that his psychopathology, that he would score highly. I mean, in terms of what his mother said about him, was that he was very charismatic. But if you told him not to do something as a child, he would do it tenfold. And that he would never be fearful of any repercussion, and that if you had a child like him, then you'd really understand, and that he could just charm the birds out of the trees. You know, everything that she talked about was really growing a little mini psychopath and not being able to do anything about his behavior. And I remembered thinking about, you know, Dr. James Fallon and him telling his story about realizing he was a psychopath and talking to his mother about his behavior. And it was almost like a very similar conversation, only Jeanette, this individual's mother, clearly had no idea. You know, yes, his behavior was problematic, but she said he had a very normal upbringing, but he would do these things. And then when you listen to him talking just in what is within the three episodes, you hear him take such pleasure at being a professional life ruiner, have no empathy, no remorse, no responsibility taking, but the ability to charm people. And, you know, his charm, the journalist who actually interviewed him for the article on which this docuseries is based, Alex Morris, spent quite a bit of time with him. And she was the one who talked to his mother. And she said he really did live in suburbia in Sacramento. And it was just a harsh conflict with who he was trying to portray himself as. But the mother really wanted her to know that the daughter had been a missionary and that he'd had this really great, stable, normal upbringing. But yet he did all these crazy things and was an entrepreneur, inverted commas, from a young age. But for him, it was all about making money. He realized he could make money from, and in his own words, he said that it all started with me hating some dumb bitch who broke my heart. And he then uploaded pictures of her for his friends to see. And then his friends decided to upload pictures of other women. And it grew from there that then they opened it as a platform and other men started to add pictures, but it really did start as a way of humiliating women and taking revenge upon them.
Well, that's how a guy who now apparently is a respected billionaire started Facebook. I mean, that's exactly what he did. I mean, he took all the freshman women in the school, posted them up, and let people say, you know, yay or nay. We like her, we hate her. She's beautiful, she's ugly. That's the reason it's called Facebook, because he put their faces up there and he wanted people to judge them. That's the entire foundation of Facebook. It's horrible. It's not only is it misogynistic, it's inhuman. And yet this asshole took it to an even higher level, or lower level. Let's be frank. And then when you get into him, you know, realizing that this is a very lucrative way to take advantage of people. In other words, it's not just, I don't think he was just getting off because he was getting money. I think he was getting off because he was getting paid for something he wanted to do, which is destroy people's lives. He actually liked that. And the whole fact that you bring up about his mother saying that his childhood was just sort of normal and a good upbringing shows that psychopaths are not nurture created. They're not created because of something they went through. If they went through bad things, that's just icing on the cake. But as we always say, it's a combination of bio, psycho, and social. And the genetic component of psychopathy is that they are born without human empathy. They just don't feel for other people. People are things to be used. And this guy couldn't have been a better example of that. And the fact that his mother says he's charismatic, he could talk the birds out of the trees. If you challenge him or you told him you don't want him to do something, that he will do it tenfold. All of those things, especially as a child, those are ticking off point after point after point in the psychopathy checklist.
I'll read to you what she said exactly in the Rolling Stone article that Alex Morris published in 2013. She said, the day was born, there was such a huge storm that it ripped the barn door off the farm where we were living at the time. Maybe that explains things. She wants me to know that older sister was a missionary, that we're normal people. He had a normal upbringing. He was good at sports, lots of friends, weekends spent hunting with dad. And this is what the journalist said, but was never normal. You couldn't intimidate him. You could tell him he had to wear pants and he'd hide under his bed. You could forbid him to get a tattoo and he'd get your face inked on his arm. But then again, he could be so sweet, so funny, so full of charisma. Unless you had a kid like this, you couldn't understand, Jeanette says. Now she's just hoping this crazy life warps into something else. But like literally everything that you hear about him and his upbringing and about the people who know him best are about his exploitative behavior, his charisma, but no empathy, no remorse, impulsive, pathological liar, no responsibility taking, sexual impulsivity. Literally, the girlfriend said that he would not let things go, i.e. he would want revenge. And in his own words, he said he wanted to fucking dominate the world like the white P. Diddy. Like everything about what he says and what he does is about being the dominator, being on top and being ruinous to other people. He said a professional life ruiner. And I agree. I believe it wasn't just about the making money, although he did make a lot of money from it and he realized it was highly profitable. And that's a question that we all have to think about. Why is it that his behavior gets rewarded? Why is it that he wasn't brought to account? Why is it that it's the victims that are shamed? Because that is part of a bigger problem, that he was incentivized to carry Absolutely. On doing what he did. And that's one of the biggest problems that we have in committing these crimes and behaving like this. Men are incentivized and others follow and they become part of, it's almost like a cult-like following and they become, it's just normal behavior to them. And I have to say that people who clicked on it and watched it at the time, you're part of the problem too, because you clicking and watching, you're now giving him that money, that platform, even though you might not be actively thinking you're a part of it, but you are. And that's one of the major problems with someone like him. And even now, Jim, there's a lot of the media trying to get interviews with him. Where is he now? What's he doing now? I mean, I don't give a shit what he's doing right now. He's a convicted criminal. Why do we need to hear from him? And by the way, he's not sorry for what he's done. So in case you were thinking that he would be saying things like he's sorry, he's not. He's just saying that that's what he did 10 years ago. And if he has no regrets, and in fact, he wish he'd gone 10 times harder. And why he says that, I believe, is because the consequence wasn't great enough for him to really have a serious repercussion or life consequence from it. He's written a book. He just thinks he's going to start another platform and start it up all over again under a different name. And that's what bothers me the most about all of this, because people will say, oh, that's horrific, that's terrible. But he says he's done his time and he can just, under a different guise, create something similar. Although he says that people are woke now and therefore, you know, that's the problem, not that his behavior was the problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the whole in him encouraging this targeted trolling, ridicule and shaming and attacking and death threats, these are the things that he actually encouraged. In fact, once he was actually arrested, once he actually had to face the fact that he did something illegal, and luckily for the world, you know, for Charlotte and Kayla Law, that James McGibney came in and basically tricked him into giving up his website and then put him up on a bullying site and took down all the content that he had on it. Thank God for that James was able to help out in that way. But what happened to this asshole took it as just a challenge to come back even harder. And he said his new site is going to lead to people getting murdered. That's his goal. What a fucking asshole. What a complete and utter excuse for humanity. The fact is that he is psychopathic, that he is a danger to the community, and anybody who encourages him, anybody in the smallest way, is part of the reason why it took off. And when Anderson Cooper had him on to ridicule his behavior and to get him to stop doing what he's doing, all that did was give him more of a national and international following, and it just grew exponentially. Luckily, Charlotte had already gotten the FBI involved. Luckily, they were cruising along in their investigation, and soon thereafter, they would take him down. But it was definitely a boost to his following. Are the people out there who decided to look at these pictures, to share these pictures, to join in on this horrible targeting, this trolling, this ridicule of the people whose pictures got stolen from them and put up on this site, this embarrassing thing? Are you really seriously that kind of a person? Give me a damn break.
But that is part of the problem, isn't it? You know, for someone like him, no publicity is bad publicity. So using and maximizing every opportunity. That's why I do worry about this three-part docu-series. Before, I didn't know his name. I didn't know about this. And now I do know his name. And he's already tweeting, et cetera. You know, it gives him that visibility and he is seeking notoriety again. So it is a bit like the mass shooters, Jim, that it's not just not naming them. It's actually doing a blackout on them. But it's very hard to tell the story, isn't it, like that? Because it becomes much more difficult. And in another way, and I'll share it with you, it's I do want these individuals on a register. I do want women to know about them. But it's a very difficult balancing act that you want to raise awareness and you want people to know. But at the same time, you're giving more oxygen and you're giving them a platform, right, to carry on or to create something new. And with him, if you read the original Rolling Stone article, he actually talks about the fact that he wanted to just find more and more ways to get or create content that shocked people, that he would just punch people at these parties that he was hosting so that it would shock people, there'd be pictures of it, and that he'd even considered seeing, he saw Mark Zuckerberg, for example, and he wanted to get him just to punch him in the face just so that it was papped and there was a record of it, that would elevate him even more. So it's the question, where do they stop? he couldn't get to Mark Zuckerberg, even though he was in the same place as him because of his security. But there's no brakes on these people. No. And the FBI, it did take them an incredibly long time. And as you know, Jim, we both know an investigation does take time. But in the meantime, more people get hurt, more people take their own lives because they feel overwhelmingly hopeless. And that if the police and FBI aren't willing to take action, then what's the redress? Where's the accountability?
Right. Well, fortunately, they did actually take action, but it took them a couple of years. And yeah, it may be because this was kind of a unique case. This may have been the first time they were ever investigating this kind of situation, this kind of site, this kind of behavior. And they can only investigate federal crimes. And so they had to find a federal crime and prove a federal crime before they could actually do anything about him. And what I thought was an amazing thing at the end of this series, a Chyron that comes up that says that Charlotte Law helped pass anti-revenge porn laws in 48 of the 50 states. Now, I don't know which the two that haven't passed it are, but I could probably guess. But damn it, those states ought to get off their asses and actually pass that legislation. The thing is that there should be a federal law because there is no question that anything on the internet isn't using an interstate facility. So any crime that occurs using an interstate facility like the internet is also a federal crime. So they should make that a federal crime and make sure that it's basically prosecuted to the fullest, because this is a horrendous thing. And it's not just embarrassing. It could be life-threatening. In this case, it was life-threatening. People were literally threatening these poor girls' lives.
This absolutely should be a federal crime. And it's the same reason, actually, why I believe stalking and coercive control should be federal crimes too. And actually, image-based sexual abuse is normally part of stalking and or coercive control. And that's how we prosecute it in the UK. It's I disagree with the term revenge porn, and I wish people wouldn't use it. And the reason being is that most women don't even know the pictures have been taken. Or if they do, it's not actual pornography. So even the terminology, you know, I've worked cases where men have taken pictures of them when they're just getting up to use the toilet. They don't even know that the pictures are being taken. And then they're posted somewhere to humiliate. So in the UK, for example, we used to prosecute it under malicious comms, malicious communications, or the Communications Act. But that wasn't really enough. And our law came in 2015. And like I said, I really don't like the terminology revenge porn. It should be image-based sexual abuse. And that here it's the good. Same. These cases have been going on for a long time. It's just that lots of people don't report them because of the shame. They don't want people seeing those photos. It's the reason Amber Heard, she had nude pictures that Johnny Depp tried to enter into evidence to shame and humiliate her. You know, it's a real way of silencing someone and humiliating them. And like you said, if you're uploading it, linking it to your social media, and you've got your baby's picture on there, your dad's on there, your mum's on there, I mean, it's just so devastating to a woman. And most oftentimes it is female victims. Yes, there can be male victims, but most oftentimes it is women. And as we heard from how he created this, it was about maximum humiliation for women that he wanted to, and his friends wanted to create. And that really Right. bothers me. There are so many men who take part in that humiliation of women. But I do want to just say something about Charlotte Laws's husband, the stepfather, Charles Purcell, the British lawyer who mm-hmm. did nothing, because he made me angry as well. I've seen that response from many people in the past, from lawyers, from police, who say things like, well, just don't look at it, just ignore it. That is not an okay response. If it's you that's exposed and vulnerable on the internet, and I'll give the caveat that perhaps he didn't understand the internet because he was an older man. So perhaps he didn't really understand the full scale of and the power of the internet. But just to say, oh, to ignore it, I could imagine for Kayla and for Charlotte, that was just so devastating. And is all he needed to do was make a call as an attorney. And that's what he did. eventually, and he spoke attorney to attorney, and her image was taken down. That's all he had to do, and he did nothing. And it just made me so angry. He lacked in empathy and understanding. And I think people, if you don't really understand the impact, what this docuseries really does is show how devastating right. it is. You cannot just ignore it, and not in this day and age. And it really makes my blood boil, because even now law enforcement say to stalking victims, just ignore it if it's on the internet. Don't go on the internet. Don't use social media. That is not an okay response.
No, because again, as you've said a number of times, it's putting the onus on the victim to avoid being victimized, but they've already been victimized. It doesn't stop the problem. And I, you know, there's a very interesting character in this, in all of this, and that's Kira Hughes, his ex-girlfriend. And, you know, she says that, you know, she was kind of caught up in everything, and she tried not to look at it badly. She tried to see the good in him and what he was doing. But eventually the thing that did apparently get to her was when she read all these messages that had been on her page that she never knew existed. And one in particular that she read was actually from a male victim who said, you know, I just don't know how much longer I can take all this humiliation. And this actually got to her. So it was a point of redemption for Kira, you know, where she realized how horrible it was. And I think that the stepfather also had a similar awakening that he realized when they got a fax basically threatening his wife's and daughter's life that, oh shit, I was stupid for minimizing this. I was stupid for not doing anything. And that brought him up into action. Same way with Kira. She got up and left the asshole. And she, from that point forward, didn't want anything to do with him. But unfortunately, an entire period of time went on, you know, where victim after victim after victim. Think about it. He said he got 150 submissions a day, times at least 2 years, while Kayla was up there, you know, when Kayla first came up on it. So, you know, from like 2011 to 2015, somewhere between X number and 150 victims a day. I mean, do the math, hundreds of thousands of victims. It's horrible. It's horrible. And for him to be celebrated, for him to be extolled in on these shows and in these venues, it's depravity. This is not, we're prudes and we're saying that everybody has to be, you know, completely clean and, you know, and all that. What we're saying is, these are human beings you're hurting. These are real, actual people. And he just tried to look at them. It was so funny. His justification when he was confronted with victims was, well, I don't know them, so, you know, it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, have you ever seen such a perfect example of psychopathy in action? They are not human to me. They are not real. I don't know them, so I don't care, period. He's literally revealing that psychopathic trait, that foundational psychopathic trait of having no human empathy. And then when he gets caught and he tries to pretend that he has changed, that, you know, he's different and that he's feigning remorse, he can't pull it off. Because minutes into that play acting, he turns it around and says, I'm going to do it even worse now.
He has the ability to charm and to turn it on when he wants. And I was curious about his girlfriend or the ex-girlfriend and how she presented. I couldn't understand how she didn't know what was going on. But when I read the article, it explained it. It explained that she was living in San Francisco, so they weren't living together for a period of time. And the journalist, Alex, went and had dinner with them both. And she saw this very lovey-dovey behavior from him towards her and her to him too, but they had an understanding that they wouldn't have sex. These were things that were her rules of dating, that they wouldn't have sex with each other, and that she didn't want to know what he was doing in his business life, which you can say, well, that's a very odd thing, like not to want to know about it. And I'm not sure why she even put that condition onto the relationship, but perhaps she didn't really understand. Perhaps she was quite naive when they got together and didn't really have a full understanding of what he was doing. But he was allowed to have sex and be with other people because he said that that was part of his job. And she said, well, as long as she didn't know about it, then he could do that because it was part of his profession. I think he sold it to her.
Did you think that she might have been coercively controlled?
Well, I mean, yes. And that's why how she came across did intrigue me. You know, she seemed a very soft, sort of gentle person, quite vulnerable, actually.
But almost in shock.
Yeah, you know, his character, the complete opposite.
Right. But she seemed to me to be somebody who was a shell of a person. Like, she didn't actually get to have her own feelings, get to have her own emotions, get to have her own rights in this relationship. You literally saw him all over all these other women, making out with guys, whatever it is. He gets to do all that. And she's basically kept in isolation from all this.
Rules and regulations, Jim. I mean, yeah, who knows what was really going on, but he clearly has the ability to turn on the charm when it suits him and to try and say the right thing. And like you say, his response, well, I didn't know them. It doesn't matter to him. They're not human. Even when he's confronted with two women, he can just completely separate out what he's doing and that he's doing nothing wrong. And he believes that. And that's what he keeps selling back to everybody.
Okay, but I will say this, and I just can't understand this. He admits that he gets submissions every day, and he says, I had to look at child pornography, kids' pictures. That means he possessed child pornography. He should have been prosecuted for that, and he should have been sent away for 20 years. What the fuck? How does he get away with doing that? I mean, if he looked at them, then they were on his device. That is possession. And unless he then turned every single one of those images over to law enforcement, then I don't understand how he's not prosecuted for that.
Yeah, well, that was how James McGibney got him to sell the site of having pictures of young underage children. And I, even when I say young underage children, I struggle even with that. You know, we know again in the UK,
all children are underage.
Exactly. You know, children can't consent. But that was the thing that made him worried about the FBI, and that's why he sold the site.
But he's only worried because he was guilty of it. But why wasn't he prosecuted for that? I just don't understand it.
Well, why wasn't he prosecuted for the rape threats, the murder threats, all the things that, you know, there are other things that he could have been prosecuted for. And when we think it was a 30-month sentence, you know, a 30-month sentence, it's just so lenient. It really is. And it really bothers me, Jim, because there isn't really any accountability here. And it's the same in the UK, by the way. The image-based sexual abuse offence, well, the maximum sentence is 2 years. So for doing this sort of thing that's so devastating, it really doesn't match the crime. So I think as well as it becoming a federal offence, and the same in the UK, the law needs to be looked at again and thinking about what the appropriate sentence is. In my view, it should be a minimum of 10 years. That's a starting point. And then anything else on top of that will be aggravating features, because this sort of crime is just growing. And since 2016 and 2019 in America, there's been a 400% increase. And primarily it's 18 to 29 year old women who are the targets. So looking at the data and knowing they're the ones who have come forward. So what really is the scale of the problem?
Right.
You know, when you think who uses social media, and, you know, I just think about even online dating where people just send pictures of themselves naked and those things that can show up in different places and spaces, and people lose their jobs over it. Right. It's devastating. Right. It's really concerning, and it's not going to go away. I mean, it's only going to keep growing, and there'll be other people like this horrific individual thinking of ways of monetizing. You know, think about the Tinder swindler, monetizing, right. exploiting, coercively controlling, exploiting money out of people. You just get more and more individuals, the incel groups, you know, thinking of ways of how to exploit others.
Right. But I want to make sure that we also highlight what I thought was the best part of this, and that is people like Kayla and Danielle who came forward, who said, who made an affirmative decision that the behavior of these horrific people, of these nasty, disgusting offenders, wasn't going to shut down their lives. They were going to rise above this and not let them ruin their lives. And I just have to give them kudos for that. And, you know, encouragement, and say that they're heroes. And they, along with Charlotte Law, Kayla's mother, and I'll throw in James McGibney in there too, but they're all heroes. They're heroes for surviving it and thriving, and for making sure that these assholes who are, you know, immature and ridiculously destructive. I mean, for no reason other than that they think it's funny, they're getting their rocks off on it, and that is just no excuse for being inhuman like this to other human beings. So I just want to applaud Kayla and Danielle and definitely Charlotte Law for the work that she did, because they're the heroes of this series.
Yeah, and I think we should definitely throw James McGibney in there, you know, somebody who just finds creative ways to go after a person because he doesn't like bullies and because mm-hmm. so many women and men were victimized. And he's still going after him now. I was looking at his Twitter account at Bullyville, and he's now, there's litigation ongoing after HM, let's call him by his initials, for over $345,000 that he's owed, and for attorney fees. And when he gets that money, he's going to donate it to women's shelters. So that tells you the spirit of who he is as well. And he's making it clear that he will keep going, trying to shut him down, because he keeps appearing on Twitter and trying to make a play for interviews and so on. And he's constantly, you know, on him, on his Twitter account, reporting him, etc. And that's what you have to do. You have to turn the tables. And right. Anonymous did that too. Anonymous also.
Oh, yeah, that's
part,
another thing.
Right?
That was
going
amazing.
After him.
Yeah.
And I did cheer, you know, because sometimes you
too.
Just got to go after these bastards and take them out in a way that they hurt other people. Well, they declared him dead in California. They went after his money. They sent him a load of vibrators, you know, all the things that they did to disrupt.
Erased his social security number. All those things are probably illegal. And they used his own tactics against him. So one of the things that's revealed,
he didn't like it at all.
Well, two things. Yeah, but two things. One is that when he was arrested and got out on bail, he covered his head up with a coat.
Yeah, he didn't want his picture taken. That's what I mean.
Picture taken. Give me a fucking break, asshole. You did that to thousands, in 1,000 times worth. To thousands of people, thousands and thousands and thousands, and you made money off of it, and you friggin' benefited from it in a famous way, and that is disgustingly bad human behavior.
And
there's
he didn't
that.
Like it when Charlotte put his address on Twitter either, but he did it
great.
To all these people. So two things that show he didn't like it when the tables were turned, and that's, I always used to run these seminars called Turning the Tables on the Stalkers. And these were creative things we always thought about of problem solving. That's what you have to do. You have to go after them. That's why I applaud James McGibney and Charlotte for turning the tables, and Anonymous, you know, a bigger entity coming after him. And he did not like it one bit.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have to discuss about this. But to our listeners, you will see this kind of stuff. As Laura said, it's happening more and more and more frequently. Don't patronize people like this. If you see something like this, go away. report it as abuse. Have it taken off social media. This is not how we should be acting towards each other as human beings. Grow up and let's actually help, not hurt the problem. Don't hurt these people. You make judgments about them, snap judgments. You have no idea what's actually going on in their lives or how those pictures were taken. Don't jump in just because other people are doing it. Please, just be a good person.
Yeah, and get behind Charlotte Laws's campaign to make image-based sexual abuse a federal crime. She's still active. And again, in the UK, you can lobby Parliament. And we want to make sure that the right sentences are appropriate as well. So we can be activists. We can do things that can lead to real change. And I really do believe the right sentences do play a part. There has to be a fear of repercussion rather than people just do months or get a slap on the wrist and then they just carry on and they want to come back bigger and better and they learn the system. We can all play a part in that. So yeah, I've appreciated talking to you, Jim. You know, I think we're both horrified at this and I do wonder what comes next. You know, every time you thought it couldn't get any worse in that docuseries, it just did. It was just, you know, made you sick to the stomach. But there are great people out there too. So we've got to keep on working together and shut these horrific individuals down and not give them the microphone and not give them the airtime.
Absolutely.
So we've enjoyed is the wrong word, but we hope that you found some interesting and illuminating things in our conversation. And for now, this is Real Crime Profile signing out.
Real Crime Profile was created by Jim Clementi, Laura Richards, and Lisa Zambetti. Produced by Laura Richards, Lisa Zambetti, Jim Clementi, and XG Productions, and distributed by Wondery. Editing by Nick Jaworski at Podcast Monster. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba.